The Big Story is brought to you by Scotia iTrade. There's a trader in all of us. When a young black man brings accusations of racial profiling and assault against an organization or someone in power, it's fair to say he's not always believed. Which is why the proliferation of recording devices has played a huge role in bringing these abuses into the public eye. Now, when an accusation is leveled, we almost expect there to be video. There almost always is. And there are things that video can tell us. It can provide evidence of a February afternoon encounter that ended with a young man face down on the concrete of a Toronto transit stop.
I didn't do anything! Okay, let me go! You're hurting me!
But there are also things that even a combination of cell phone cameras and closed circuit security footage can never tell us. And there are also things that this video shows clearly, but are yet still open to interpretation. So none of us should be surprised that systemic racism and the bias associated with it can play a major role in incidents like these. But how do you spot that on tape? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. Jennifer Yang is the Toronto Star's identity and inequality reporter. She has spent an awful lot of time looking at video footage of a few minutes from earlier this year. Start by telling me, who is Reese Maxwell Crawford and why are we talking to you about him?
Well, Reese is a 20-year-old young black man who lives in Toronto. And the reason we are talking about him is because he recently filed a lawsuit against the TTC, the Toronto Transit Commission, and the Toronto Police over what he is alleging to be a case of assault that was unjustified, that was triggered by racial bias and discrimination. It's a bit of a story for sure.
What does he say happened?
So let's cast our minds back to February, almost a year ago now. So on February 18th, Reese was riding the St. Clair West streetcar. And at one point, he got into an altercation with three TTC fare inspectors. And what happened next was captured by multiple cell phone videos, as these events are nowadays.
Right, everybody has them.
Exactly. And it was posted online. And what people saw was really shocking for many Torontonians. So it showed Reese being pinned face down on a streetcar platform by three adult TTC fare inspectors, and he's just screaming, he's shrieking.
I didn't do anything!
He's repeating over and over, I didn't do anything. He's begging to be let go. He screams that he's in pain. So this video hit the web, and it sort of went viral, and it triggered sort of a bunch of stories, media reports about what went on here. And months later, just a couple weeks ago, he filed a lawsuit in connection with that incident, alleging that he was assaulted by these officers and that he was assaulted and targeted because he's a young black man who is wearing a hood. So he's basically alleging that he was racially profiled in that incident.
Do we have any idea what sparked the altercation before the cameras came on?
At the time of these videos coming out, everything was very confusing. That was the big question. What possibly could have led to this? So a couple of things have come out since that have filled in the blanks a little bit. In July, the TTC actually triggered an internal investigation looking into this incident. So we have the accounts of the TTC officers from the report that they released. And we also have Reese's perspective from his interview with me, but also his lawsuit, which he recently filed. And I should just say off the top that the lawsuit makes allegations that have yet to be tested in court, and the respondents, which is the police and the TTC, have not yet filed statements of defense.
But the officers in question have talked to the TTC, at least, about what they say happened.
Yes.
So we do have two versions.
We do. And so we actually, I would say, have three versions.
Okay.
So we have the TTC officers' versions of events, which they shared with this investigator, the TTC. We have Reese's version, and then we really have a third version, which comes through the 9 CCTV cameras that were sort of placed throughout the streetcar and really capture the entire event leading up to the moment where he is tackled and brought to the ground by the TTC officers. And strangely, even though we have a video, there's still so much disagreement over what went on in the streetcar leading up to this takedown.
Right. Well, this is why we wanted to talk to you about this story in particular, because we see, I mean, cell phone videos of discriminatory or incidents or assaults by police officers and other people are on social media every day now. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we treat them as evidence, mm-hmm. at least in the court of public opinion. And you have, you put together. So maybe it's better to start by you telling me what you and the Toronto Star did with all the video that existed.
So there are a couple pieces of video. There are the bystander cell phone videos that captures the aftermath of the takedown by the TTC officers. And then we have a surveillance video from the TTC cameras inside the streetcar. So what we did was we stitched them together so that you can see the whole thing now in one visual narrative sequence from beginning to end. What we also did was we, after stitching this together, we also presented the two sides of what the TTC officer was thinking and perceiving and what Reese was thinking and perceiving in the exact same moments. And really what they were experiencing dramatically different streetcar rides. But when you watch the video, their stories don't come through. But once you hear from them, it's clear that they were having incredibly different experiences on that same streetcar. So we now know Reese's side of the story after he came forward with his lawsuit and spoke to the Star. So what he told me was he was 19 years old at the time, and he lived downtown in a basement apartment, and he was traveling to meet his girlfriend at her house. And it was actually kind of an exciting day for him because his mother was going to meet his girlfriend's mother for the first time, and it was family day long weekend. And then he gets off the subway, and then he transfers to the St. Clair West streetcar. It's winter, so he's wearing a black jacket, and he's got the hood up, and he says that under his hood, he's wearing headphones. He said he had black Beats by Dre noise-canceling headphones, and he was blasting Kendrick Lamar. So I think a lot of people have had this experience commuting on TTC. You've got your music blasted up loud, and you're just kind of in your zone. And that's how he described it. He said he was just zoned out, sort of lost in the music that was on full volume and kind of lost in his own thoughts. He gets on the streetcar. He's queuing. He's the last person to get on. And he just stops right inside the door. And he sort of leans on the Presto card reader, and then he kind of grasps the pole. And directly across from him is a TTC fare inspector who's actually off duty and traveling back to his office at that point to finish his shift. And Reese says he's just standing there looking out the window, really not looking at anybody or anything in particular, just kind of thinking and kind of actually deliberating whether or not he wants to get some food. He's like, I'm hungry, I want some food, but I don't have very much money. Should I get some food? Should I not? The first stop is at Bathurst, and he gets off to let other passengers leave. And then he gets back on the streetcar. And when he gets off, the TTC officer across from him and two others who at some point joined that officer, they all get off the streetcar. So they're off the streetcar, but they stop on the platform and they turn and they look at Reese. And you can see this from the surveillance video. Reese gets back on the streetcar, the doors close, and then he tells me he has a change of heart. He's like, you know what? I'm going to get food after all. There's a Harvey's right there.
Okay.
He presses the button to open the door. He steps off and then he's shoved by one of the fare inspectors. And you can see this in the surveillance video. He flies backwards into the streetcar, lands on his back, and then he immediately jumps up and comes after the fare inspector with his fist cocked, and he takes a swing.
Yep.
And then that's where everything goes down. So that's Reese's story. And in his, as he told me in our interview, that shove came out of nowhere for him. He had no idea who did it or why. He was lost in his thoughts, and he was just completely taken off guard. And then he just said he went into fight mode as soon as he was shoved because he just was scared, confused, and had no idea what was going on. So that's Reese's story.
And once he takes a swing, that's when everything goes down.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so now put me inside the fare inspector's head.
There are really three fare inspectors involved in this incident. And so everything we know about their side of the story comes from this report that the TTC released in July. So they're only identified in this report as Officer 1, 2, and 3.
Right.
Actually, Respondent 1, 2, and 3. So I'll refer to them as 1, 2, and 3. According to this report, they all get on the streetcar at St. Clair West Station after completing their shift. So they're technically not working anymore. They're just traveling back to their office so that they can go home. So they get on, and they all kind of stand at different spots on the streetcar. And Officer number one stands sort of around the middle. Everything is going along normally, and then a bunch of passengers come on at St. Clair West Station, including Reese, who stands directly in front of fare inspector number one. So he says he immediately takes notice of him because According to the inspector, Reese begins staring at him immediately. And he describes the stare as constant, and he describes it as a dead stare, actually. And he sort of repeats over and over again about how this stare was constant and unbreaking, and he didn't understand why Reese was looking at him. So he then starts asking him questions. Are you okay? He says he assures Reese that he's not checking fares. And he says, can I help you? And Reese doesn't respond. He doesn't say anything. And that adds to his sense of discomfort. He actually says at first he didn't feel anything about the fact this kid was standing there and looking at him. But after he tried speaking to him and he didn't reply, he starts to feel uncomfortable. And he, you know, eventually starts to feel threatened and intimidated. So then one of the other fare inspectors, number two, he looks over and he sees what he also believes to be Reese and his colleague sort of looking at each other. So he walks over and fare inspector one kind of, you know, probably says something to him about what he's thinking or feeling. And then they beckon for the third fare inspector to join them. So all three are now standing together across from Reese. They're looking at him. They allege he's looking at them. And they all describe the situation as confusing, threatening, intimidating. So they don't know what to make of this kid, they say. And then when the streetcar stops at Bathurst, they see him getting off. And they also get off. And they say that they then stop on the streetcar and turn to look at him because, according to Officer One, he felt like there was something unusual going on with this kid. And if something happened later, he wanted to make careful notes about what was going on and just sort of remember what he did. So they see the door close and Reese is standing inside of the streetcar and they are outside. And then they say that Reese starts anxiously pushing the button to open the door. And then he, quote unquote, lunges at Officer Number One, at which point he said that Reese entered his personal space. I think he described something about an emotion in his eyes, or maybe he saw his fist clenched. And so he felt threatened in that moment, and he shoved him with both hands. And he said it was to create distance between himself and Reese.
Up next.
We know there is so much research that shows how fallible memory is. And that's why eyewitness testimony is so problematic.
We all have investment goals, and Scotia iTrade can help you reach yours. Access free tools and resources to sharpen your investment skills. Visit ScotiaiTrade.com to start direct investing today. Scotia iTrade, there's a trader in all of us.
So once you put the video together, who's telling the truth?
It's impossible to say because these stories are unfolding in people's heads, and obviously the video doesn't show that. And
does the video back up both their claims?
You know, I think some people would say that the video backs up Reese's claim and other people say it backs up the officer's claims. So, and we've heard that from readers after publishing our story. But one thing we do know from the video, irrefutably, is that Reese never put his hands in his pockets. And I find that so interesting because TTC officer number one told the investigator who looked into this incident that he recalled him putting his right hand in the pocket, and that's when he considered the possibility of a weapon. And actually, the TTC investigator also interviewed another passenger who also recalled that Reese had his hands in his pockets. But when you watch the video, which is only less than 5 minutes long, he never places hands in his pockets even once. They clearly are never going in there. So, you know, that just says something very interesting, I think, about perceptions and about memory and the fallibility of both. And I think it raises some questions. For Reese's lawyer and in their lawsuit, they allege that the officer's actions were informed by racial biases and stereotypes.
When you cover incidents like this, because this isn't the only one of these that you've looked into, how often do you find that those kind of phantom memories persist among people who have watched the incident? And what do they convey?
We know there is so much research that shows how fallible memory is. And that's why eyewitness testimony is so problematic, because people never have a perfect memory of something that they witnessed, there will always be gaps, and people tend to backfill memories, drawing from maybe stories they've heard since that event occurred, and maybe informed by their own personal biases, perhaps unconscious biases, and perceptions and life experiences.
If we can see the video and read it from either side, why do we constantly hold up video evidence of things like this as proof, no matter what side we're on?
Well, video, you know, is the perfectly neutral and passive observer. And I think without the video, we would know a lot less than we know now.
Right.
And ultimately, it will play a huge role in determining the outcome of this lawsuit, I believe. But yeah, it's imperfect. And I think a lot of people often point that out too, that even video to some extent can be subjective. And you interpret video through the prism of your personal perspective.
What happened to Reese?
After the video from February from the cell phones, the bystander videos went viral, we didn't hear from Reese. And in fact, he was never identified at the time. And he did file an initial lawsuit, which they've now discontinued because there were some issues with that lawsuit. But he was identified as a John Doe. So he really, nobody knew who he was. Nobody knew what happened to him. And that's what I was sort of interested in finding out about too when I decided to write the story, is how has this affected him?
Yeah.
And it's affected him tremendously. At the time of this incident, he was taking paralegal studies at Humber College. He had that girlfriend that I mentioned that he was very in love with. And he had two part-time jobs. He was very athletic. He rode his bike. He played basketball. And he had his own apartment. And after this happened, his life really fell apart. It kind of cratered. He was physically injured, he says, from this incident. He suffered a concussion, according to him, and also according to medical documents that I viewed. And he dislocated his shoulder and injured his back. So he immediately had to seek medical attention. But he also was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder, according to Reese and his family. He was immediately very distraught and sort of stopped being able to function in his daily life. And so I spoke to his mother, and basically her life has been consumed in the aftermath of this with helping Reese get back on his feet and keeping her son together. He ended up moving back in with her in March, so less than a month after this all happened. And he ended up also having to drop out of college because he couldn't go on with that. And he also couldn't handle the jobs that he was working at the time. She says that he became very anxious, kind of introverted, and really had a profound loss of confidence. Something she said that really stuck out for me was that he started going around with this new mantra where he would say to her, "I'm a good man, Mom, I'm a good man." And it seemed like he was reassuring himself of that.
Yeah.
And she saw him just basically become more and more depressed. And this culminated, I think, in May. On a particularly bad day, Reese actually jumped out of his mother's car and ran to a bridge and considered and contemplated suicide. He had to be kind of coaxed down by police, and he was taken to a hospital. And he was actually hospitalized for 4 days and treated for major depressive disorder. It's now been about 9 months, and he's still struggling with pain, taking painkillers and doing physio. And he's still struggling with mental health issues. He's on antidepressants and I think sleeping pills. And previous to this, he was a very healthy young man. He had never had to take medication for anything. He also said he was really upset and profoundly unsettled by the way he felt like people were perceiving him in the aftermath of this incident.
Mm-hmm.
He went down a rabbit hole of reading online comments about the video and the initial stories. And he just saw so many people blaming him for not paying his fare and kind of, you know, that's what you get when you skip out in your fare type of comments. And he says he did pay his fare, and the fare issue never came up with any of the TTC officers or the investigator who looked into it. And he felt like people just saw him in a way that he said he'd worked so hard. He'd worked so hard in his life to not become the type of guy that people we're now perceiving him to be. And that really profoundly disturbed him and still disturbs him. And it was, in fact, one of the reasons why he wanted to come forward with a story. He said, I want people to see who I really am.
And what happened to the three officers after the incident?
One officer ended up resigning. That's the officer who pushed Reese, but we don't know why. The TTC says he resigned for unrelated reasons. I believe the two other officers may still be employed with the TTC, but...
Did they face any discipline from the TTC in the investigation?
So the investigation by the TTC basically concluded that there was insufficient evidence that racial discrimination took place, and it found that the officers acted reasonably and that the use of force was justified and lawful. The only sort of unprofessional conduct that they found was that the officer who pushed Reese had smiled at him at a tense moment. But when that report came out, the officer had already resigned.
And we'll find out when it goes to court what happens next.
Yes, we will.
Thanks, Jennifer.
Thanks for having me.
Jennifer Yang, identity and inequality reporter at the Toronto Star. That was The Big Story, brought to you by Scotia iTrade. You can visit scotiaitrade.com to start direct investing today. For more from us, visit us at thebigstorypodcast.ca. Find our old episodes there. Leave us a comment. Also, hit us up on social media at Big Story Podcast, on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. And you can subscribe and rate and review anywhere you get your podcasts. Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath-Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.